are listening to a podcast presentation of Hillside Four Square Church in Reno, Nevada.
Better Together. One of the things that really impacted me was a realization that God answers prayers many times by putting people in our life to be His representatives and interacting with us. There's a study I came across about 3 weeks ago in Perspectives on Psychology and Science, and it talked about the effect of loneliness and lack of social connection. And said it's as dangerous to health, especially for those under the age of 65, as a person who smokes a pack a day or who is a severe alcoholic. And so we recognize certain things as potential health challenges. We don't recognize that social isolation can be a huge, huge, has a huge impact on us. And it's interesting, I touched on it very briefly last week, that we can go through life with the illusion of connection through social media. And at the same time, what social media does is it gives us little snapshots of people's lives. We'd think if all you do, all you know of a person is what you see on their social media page, what do you know of them? You know what they've eaten probably on Instagram, that. You get to see these little tiny snaps of life. We don't get to see anything outside of it. And it can serve as kind of a panacea or something where we have the illusion of being connected to people and knowing, but we don't really know and we're not really known. And so that's one of the reasons that the church exists, is so that we can be connected to both God and connected to each other. And to pursue relationship with God happens in the context of relationship with each other. So this is not just a Hillside core value. I think this is a Christian core value, which is that we would be in connected relationships, pursuing relationship with God together. Here at Hillside, when we gather together, we intentionally build times into our service that we would have the opportunity to mingle. I'm going to talk a little bit more about those at the end, but just a little bit of a commercial or this would be more of a flashback. I can remember we had someone visit our church, and they were on vacation, and they were in ministry at a church somewhere else in the world. And this guy, this happens occasionally. If you go on vacation, how many of you go to church when you're on vacation? Some of you do. I have a confession. We just don't do it. There's been like one or two, like Santa Rosa that one time we did. So it's like we can remember that one time. But this guy came up to me during the greeting time and said, "Hey, I'm so-and-so from such-and-such, and I just need to tell you, this is a really inefficient use of your service time." And I said, "I can totally understand why you would say that. We're wasting time right now interacting with each other. We could be just like getting it. We could get this service down to an hour, 56 minutes maybe, if we removed all the connection opportunity." I said, "But growing up in church as I did, it was never really enough. I mean, here's what would happen. So you stand up for a second. Pretend you're in a row and I'm in a row, okay? We're at church. We're looking this way, and the pastor says, "Okay, will you turn around and greet the person behind you?" That was greeting time. Anybody else? You have that experience before? Or they give you the canned phrase to say, tell the person next to you, and then it's like, whatever. So it didn't really work. I can remember in the first year that Joni and I were pastoring here, we didn't have a whole lot of connection within the church. It was a little bit of a turbulent first couple of years. There weren't a whole lot of kids that were attending. Mine were among the youngest. And we went to another church in town because we were so desperate to connect. And so we went on a Saturday night service, and our kids went to their kid program, and they had a blast. And I'm at church, and this is what I'm thinking. I'm sitting next to my wife, and I said, "Babe, we're going to interact with people today, and it's going to be great, and it's going to feed our souls, and it's going to be like God giving us a shot in the arm, because we need that. We need to feel like we matter." And so at some point, the pastor says, "Okay, everybody, we're going to take a couple minutes to greet each other. We'll be back in just a minute." And so Joni and I are standing. Come here. We stand up. And I'm like, this is not me at all. But I'm like, give me people. So this is what we saw everywhere we went. Everybody turned away. And we're in the middle. And I'm looking around. And I said, can you stinking believe this? What's wrong with us? I was like, I came to church to connect, and everybody got the memo to turn the other way. And so I was like, this really, really bad. So I thought it did hurt, but I went home, and it was one of those moments of, I don't want anybody to ever go to a place where they feel like they can connect and to get the back. Or to get the, I'm on my way to see someone else and just kind of get passed by. My goal is that we as a church family are people who notice. And I think one of my favorite things is I had a conversation with some dear friends. They mostly participate at Hillside in our Facebook Live broadcast. And they said they came to church one Sunday and someone came up to them, introduced himself, and asked them, are you new? And he said, the first thing I thought is, I attended this church for almost 10 years. And now you're asking if I'm new? And then he said, I decided not to be offended by it. Instead, I thought, this is what I love about this place. That someone risked coming over and looking foolish to come up and interact with me and make sure that I was feeling like I belonged. Like, I would rather have that. And so it was like, that was awesome. So, the idea of connected relationships, if and when you go through the Explore Hillside class, one of the assumed responsibilities is that we're going to spend time together. That's like one of the five things that you have to say, yeah, I'm signing up for this. So it doesn't have to be always in the same situation, but we're going to agree. If we're going to be in a church community together, that community, in order to have community, has to commune. You get it? Okay. I'm getting a little bit of an echo, so, which isn't bad, but we're going to talk in a little bit about a theology of chairs. Yes, so think on that. So, question for you. Was Jesus an introvert or an extrovert? If you believe Jesus was an extrovert, raise your hand. If you believe Jesus was an introvert, no, introverts would never raise their hand. Yeah, Jesus was an introvert, raise your hand, okay? Okay, a lot of the time, we cast Jesus in our own image. Jesus was a lot like me. Jesus understood me. If Jesus grew up in the Pacific Northwest, he's a jeans and flannel kind of a guy. Grew up on Nirvana and Pearl Jam and loved Soundgarden. You know, the things that made him upset, he was always a Patagonia guy, that was him. No, you grow up in L.A., he was more kind of hipster-ish. But we do that. I'm not going to say, well, Jesus was one or the other. I just know that he did what his father led him to do. And part of what he did was go be by himself with God. That doesn't mean, you know, we all need that time by ourselves. Some of us recharge in that alone time, the solitary. Some of us, we recharge in the context of crowds. So this isn't in order to be better together. This does not mean we have to become different than we are because God wired us just like we are, which leads to an interesting thing. This is the commercial. There is a really great book called Introverts in Church, Finding Our Place in an Extroverted Culture by Adam McHugh. And I recommend this book to all my pastor friends, especially those who are extroverts, because most pastors who are extroverts spend a lot of their time trying to fix the introverts in their church. And so you don't necessarily have that problem because I am more on the introverted scale than the extroverted scale. But it will affect how you interact with the world and how you see it, and your personality type will affect how you interact with people. And the goal here is not to turn every single person into a social butterfly. The goal is to recognize, as people who follow Jesus, we all have a responsibility to intentionally connect or to stir up or encourage other people. And so one of my favorite church stories goes back, a person who was attending the church, who was involved in one of the campus ministries, and came up to me after church and said, I have some constructive criticism for you. And I love that kind of stuff. I love when people, you know, want to help me by criticizing. And especially right after I finished the message. That's my favorite point. That's the favorite time. So I usually after church, I find a place to sit up here. And that's my winding down. And so people will often approach and want to talk, and I can do it. But it's not like after I'm done here, I just want to go plunge in. Hey, people, and interact. It's I'm bleeding down the adrenaline or whatever. She says, I just really see this dichotomy in your life. I said, what do you mean? I said, well, you can engage with people when you're teaching, and you can lead people through this and that. But when it comes time for like after church, that's where you're missing it. I said, what did I do wrong? Well, you know, criticize me. She said, you're doing it. You need to go and like be bouncing around from person to person and just making sure everybody feels loved and connected and welcome. And I have to tell you, I laughed at her. Not because I was mean, but because it's like, oh, you're an extrovert and you've been taught that this is what leaders do. People go with what they've been taught. And so I said, have you ever heard of the introversion versus extroversion orientation? She said, yes, but I believe every person can be, you know, more extroverted. And I said like a true extrovert. That's what you think. You know, there's 75% of you in the world and 25% of us. And yet you're always trying to make us like you. And so she came in my office and I talked to her for a little bit. And I told her, you may think I'm doing it wrong, but there's people in the church that are doing the connecting with other people. And I connect with some, but the whole goal is not to make me like something else. And she was frustrated with that answer. And I said, that's fine. No, the goal is not to make you become something that you're not. The goal is to have you say yes to Jesus increasingly as time goes by in new areas of life. And really, as we're going to be in Hebrews 10, 23 through 25. American Christianity is often very me-focused. What's in this for me? That comes, you know, back in the day there was a saying the U.S. Army had, be all you can be. Burger King, have it your way. You know, the transition from like the 60s and 70s, we saw magazines like People and Us transition to Self. Real magazine. It mirrors our culture. And so when Christians are like, well, I need to go and I need to be fed. I need to get what I need to get from God. And doing so is a lot like going through a buffet line when there's a very limited amount of food as the first person. And saying, oh, good, they brought bacon, enough for me, and scooping it all onto your plate and going and eating it, and no one else gets the bacon. But you got fed. There is something about a communal nature where we're considering others as well, not just ourselves. So the responsibilities that Christ has given to his followers is to take responsibility for each other. Our sin nature says me first. Our new nature puts on Christ and says, not me first, your will be done. It's really funny. And I use the examples from preschool a lot, but we've got like 85 kids. And when you get 85 kids together from the like 0 through 6, you get to see the best of human nature and the worst of human nature. And there's nothing quite as illustrative of a person who is selfish and self-focused and me-focused than a bunch of babies, like between the ages of 9 months and 24 months. Because if you have something they want, they merely view you as an obstacle to their gratification. And they will go, and somebody else could be, you know, sitting in, this is baby land over here, the ladybugs. And they could be sitting on their little couch, you know, kicking back, drinking their bottle. We've got this little guy who'll get his daily bottle and go lay there and just kind of kick back and like, dude, in 25 years, I can totally see you watching football doing the exact same thing. And so he's laying there. But the couch is a hot commodity. And so one of our other little angels, little girl, goes over and she sees him on the couch. And she just grabs him by the shirt, whew, onto the ground, strong little girl, takes his bottle, lays on the couch, and she's doing it now. That is what me first looks like. Me first Christianity, me first spirituality. It doesn't matter that the poor little guy is laying on the ground crying because I got mine. That's our world. That's what we live in. People that focus on themselves first are babies. We try and coach those babies, but it's not like we're like, you know what? I can't believe you. You're so immature. Yeah, they are. But the older we get, we can start to take responsibility to be mature on our own and to focus on others as well. And part of this is, as we transition and grow up, we get to be mothers and fathers, big brothers and big sisters in the faith. And then the older we get, to be grandpas and grandmas in the faith. Let's look at Hebrews 10. Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day drawing near. So, hold fast the confession has to do with my faith and my hope in Jesus Christ. And that faith and hope has a direct effect on my behavior, my choices, my actions, personally and towards other people. It says we need to be thinking how we can stir up others towards love and good works. The word for stir up is also used to provoke. Okay, get that. When you think the word provoke, do you think something positive? Provoking is something that you do if you're a big sibling. Provoking is something you do, like if after the fight last night, you come across a hardcore Conor McGregor, the notorious MMA, and you say something about, wow, that was a really great fight, especially the 10th round. Your guy almost had him, especially when he was laying on his back, shouldn't have stopped that. That's provoking. Somebody, you're looking for a fight. But there's a way we can actually look to stir up, to provoke people towards love and good works. And that's what we get to do together. That's one of the main purposes of why we gather. To stir up, to provoke one another. Love is affection, goodwill, wanting and acting God's best towards each other. What are the good works? You know, wouldn't it be nice if we just had a list? Okay, what am I supposed to be doing? Give me the list of good works I'm supposed to be doing. I'm a list person. Bullet points, please, would even be better. So I can cross them off. List crosser offers. Where are you? God bless America. That's awesome. That's what makes us awesome, is this. And others are people like, yeah, whatever. Anyway. So, good works. I don't like what this definition is. But good works. Anything that a person undertakes that is good and benefits others. Oh, so whatever you do, do it well to the glory of God. Be and do what Jesus would be and do in your shoes. Oh, so encourage people to say, what does good look like in your life? Do that. The Jerry Cook test. Is it illegal? No. Is it immoral? No. Is it unbiblical? No. Then do it. Well, I don't know if it's the right thing. Do something. If it doesn't fit into those categories, do good. Okay? Encourage one another. In a commitment to a community like this, you have to know every single one of us matters. There's not anyone here who's like, yeah, we've got, you know, a good 90% of people that really, they're important, but the other 10% are kind of dead weight. And we don't really need you. That's not the case at all. Every person matters. And so when we gather, one of the main goals we have is to encourage one another, to exhort one another, to impart courage, to help people battle discouragement, to provide comfort, to console, to strengthen, to teach. And then he says something to the effect of, because the day is coming. And what he's talking about is there's going to come a time when Jesus returns, and by then everything will be answered. We have the opportunity to encourage one another. When Tim was talking today about having a place like this to be able to come and to receive some sort of encouragement, not have to really hope that he's going to be receiving the, you know, thank you, sir, may I have another. That's positive. But we have the opportunity to engage with people. Some of us will do it much faster and quicker. Some will do it slower and more tentatively. But to engage people, to find out where they're at so we can be an encouragement to them. The words we speak, the way that we act, the consideration. It's kind of a catch-22 holding a door open these days. The other day, I was at Starbucks picking up the pastries that they donate for us. Thank you, Starbucks. And as I was getting towards the door, I can see the reflection behind me. There's a woman coming up, about my age-ish, Don't want to guess on that either. And I'm getting there, and the thought in my head is, do I open the door for her and hold it? And is she somebody that would be offended by that because it happens? You know what? And I'm thinking, you know what? If my mom was here and I didn't hold the door open for her, I would hear about it. Oh, Louie. It's for a lady. You have to do it for ladies. That's what she would do. She's not church lady, but sometimes she does that little thing. And so I held the door and I just put on my best smile, which, you know, it's like, what's wrong with that man? No, she's going by. And she stops and she says, thank you so much for seeing that I was coming here to the door and opening it for me. That's so considerate. People aren't considerate anymore. And I'm like, bless my heart. I know. Made me feel so good. I'm so glad. It can be something as simple as acknowledging another person. You know, the very fact that I may have been the guy who was really driving fast through the Galleria and this Starbucks parking lot to get the spot up front because I saw someone else going for it. Same guy opened the door. It's like, I saw the spot from like 100 yards away. It's like, into the spot. God helps those who help themselves. That's in the Bible, right? It's like, no. But consider others better than yourself. Encourage one another. There's several scriptures I'm going to read from Philippians, Ephesians, and John that are just some examples of Jesus-style life and behavior. Do nothing from selfish ambition or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you look not only to his own interests, but also to the interests of others. Ephesians. I, therefore, a prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you've been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love. Jesus in John 13. A new commandment I give you, that you love one another just as I have loved you. You also are to love one another. By this all people will know that you're my disciples, if you have love for one another. Jesus again, John 15. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Greater love has no one than this, that someone lay down his life for his friends. You're my friends if you do what I command you. One another pops up a lot there. Who's the one another that you're going to encourage? Who's the one another that you're going to exhort? Who's the one another that you're going to offer consolation to? Think on that. These scriptures talk about consideration, humility, patience, love, and one another. Philippians, we follow the model of Christ, not grasping for position, but considering others and their needs first. Ephesians, living worthy of the calling that's been put upon us. John, love one another, Jesus style. The identifying characteristic of a person who follows Jesus is they love the one another's. This is not always a big, loud scene by everybody. Many times it's quiet. In consideration, the only person who actually knows is the person who gets to receive it. So here's where we come to a theology of chairs. Life together. A few weeks ago, it was in June, I was having a conversation with Daniel Brown, who was in town to do a Holy Spirit seminar at my parents' church in Carson City. And we're talking, and he's one of the people in my life who's had a very strong input, along with, you know, Jerry Cook and Chuck Schumake and a few other guys. And he said, so, you've been doing this for a long time. I wanted to ask you, you've been pastoring for 17 years, what's your theology of chairs? I got nothing. Theology of chairs? What do I believe God believes about our chairs? You know, I've heard some people believe that I've missed it because our theology of chairs has kind of shifted because we went from kind of the cushy chairs that we had with the Spanish church. And now we've got these, some of these, if you're sitting on a brown chair, these were purchased in 1974. Would you believe that? Yes. No, anyway, what's the theology of chairs? And I said, Daniel, I don't know. And he just laughed. His life, he's got his life verse is one where it actually talks about that he's supposed to go into places and like a bull would toss someone by the horns, he's to kind of launch people into things. And he said, I'm just trying to provoke you. I'm thinking, awesome. This is good. I can grow. There's also a part of me that would dig my feet in. You going to do something to tell me I need to do something? Anybody besides me, you dig your feet in? It's like, I'll do what I want when I want, but I want it to be my idea. I mean, I'm not stubborn, right? And he said, so what's the purpose of church? And so I went through purpose of church is so we can grow in relationship with God and with each other. It's like, yeah. And who does God use to help us grow with each other? And he says, well, people. So in your theology of chairs, where do people sit? It's like wherever they want. It's like, yeah, you're going to end up in interesting places if you do that. So what do you mean? He said, well, where would you sit if you're coming into a church for the first time and you didn't want to interact? And I was like, that's easy. Egypt, back here. I'd be, you know, off where I'm just kind of by myself. Back here behind the sound booth, kind of Rivera corner over here. Yeah. There. And he says, exactly. He said, so for years at the Coastlands in Aptos, where he pastored for many years, he said, we had ushers. And they would rope off sections of chairs so that people would get escorted. So every chair got filled up. And I'm thinking, my skin's crawling. You going to tell us where to sit? And he said, it doesn't work everywhere, but we believe if God created the church that we can pursue relationship with him and with each other, and that we're supposed to be stirring one another up towards good words and encouraging one another, it's going to be a lot easier to do that if our proximity to other human beings is minimal. We're close. It's like, oh, so what you're saying is if we want people to actually have opportunity to interact with each other, it'd be nice if they were in the same zip code. Okay. Don't worry. I'm not going to, like, and this is where I've hired a brute squad that's going to, like, herd us every week so where we get to all sit. And, you know, Richard, you'll be in the front row every week because I know how much you would appreciate that. Yes. No. But I at least wanted to share the information that when we gather to put ourselves next to a human gives us an opportunity to potentially be a point that God uses. Be a tool that God can use at church. Instrument sounds better, but tool is appropriate. So, life together, greeting time, an inefficient waste of 10 minutes. Or an opportunity to acknowledge other people. I get to, you know, part of reading the Introverts in Church book gave me a lot more. I mean, I'm an introvert myself, but oftentimes when I'm explaining what we're about to do, I want to say this can be something that's a daunting task that we're about to engage in. For some of us, when we hear, yeah, we're all going to go greet one another and get a pastry, a cup of coffee, you're running in your head, yeah, we all doesn't include this all. Because I'm just like, that's not, I don't want to do that. Go into a crowd, you know, it's like, what was that? What about Bob when he's trying to go into the elevator with everybody in there? You could approach it and back around the other way. So, yeah, baby steps, yeah. So, greeting time. It also makes me wonder, how long is somebody new at Hillside? When do you, like you're no longer new? A year? 6 months? 6 weeks? I don't know. But it's something to think about. We have one service, basically. You know, Easter time we had two, but one service. So mostly, if you come to the same service, you have the opportunity to interact with each other. But if we don't take the time to at least acknowledge others, we could go to church with people, especially in a church of this size, we're like 120 people. We could go to a church with people and never actually get to know what their name is if we didn't have the name tag. And not even know if we met them in the real world that we were going to the same place. There's an opportunity for us to look to engage at our comfort level, and maybe God moves us a little bit past that to think, I'm not here just for me. Life together, family feast. Everybody eats, right? Come on. Yes, we eat. And so once a month, we take a chunk of time to set up some tables and our food's prepared. Like today, it's hot dogs and sausages and other stuff that goes along with that. But we take the time to eat together. It's not like an insidious attempt to draw out church to make it longer. It's an opportunity to make a connection with people, maybe a deepen one that we already have, or to make a new one. There's people here who have friends in their life now because they sat at tables during family feast. And my encouragement to you is, let me feed you. By me, I mean the people who are actually good at this. Okay? Stick around for 10 minutes and take the chance of maybe the church would be a better place for me to be able to have someone connect with me. Because you may be feeling like, you know what, I feel pretty good. Not everybody's feeling pretty good. I have a really hard time starting conversations with strangers. Anybody else? Okay. You cover sports, you cover weather, other surface topics. You know, fortunately we have the fight of the century that took place last night. I could talk about that for a while. But how do you start a conversation with strangers? For some people, they're like, I've learned from my wife where she will just start engaging people. How's your day? It's like, we're just trying to get in and out of this place as quickly as possible. How the day is doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. What I've learned and where I'm growing is I will actually be in places and I will think, how I do it is I make a game of it. I'm going to talk to this individual and I'm scared to death to do it. And in 3 minutes, I'll be gone and I'll never see him again. But I'm going to take the chance just by saying, you know, how's your day? That sometimes people will actually respond and answer how they're really thinking. I don't do this if there's like 20 people in line because I am not that guy. But in a situation where it's like, it's just me, I'm taking it as kind of as a sign from God. Hey, maybe you should ask the person how their day is. So I would. And what I see happen more often than not is people, you know, maybe it's because I have such a kind face. I mean, look at this. Open up to this. But they just will start talking. I had one guy tell me, you know what? I just really sense you're a holy man. I said, really? So, can I get that on video? Will you say that, please? It's like, what is this? Like, there's just this thing about you. Like, yeah, I've heard that. But just asking, all of a sudden, these interactions they lead to places that maybe God set something up where I didn't intend to end up praying for 3 or 4 people who were in the place. Having people who start lining up. Hey, what are you doing? It's like, I'm praying for this person for this. Hey, if you're praying, will you pray for me too? It's like, I'm not setting up shop here at this store, but I guess you roll with it. And I go home and tell my wife, guess what happened today? It's funny. Did I tell the story about the shoulders and... Did I? Okay. If I did, I'm getting older, I repeat myself. I tell my kids this all the time. The other day, Chris and I went to Bully's to eat lunch because it's one of my favorite places in the world. And they have a phenomenal Oriental chicken salad that you can turn into a buffalo blue cheese salad very easily. And so we interacting with the waitress. We have the same one all the time. They usually put one server on the floor and turn her loose no matter how many tables are occupied. And so she's there, and I hear, like, we're talking about, Chris and I are talking about spiritual gifts. And I hear, like, God saying, and it's not like he said, hey, ask that, but it's like, I just get the nudge. He said, ask her about her wrists. Ask her if her wrists hurt. I'm thinking, that's creepy, God. Yeah, two guys sitting at a table, and this girl going around as a server in a pub that's actually a bar at night. It's like, yeah, hey, how's your wrists? It's like, nah, that's, no. And so I'm thinking, if I'm going to ask her about her wrists, I'm going to need to know a little bit more. So go ask her. I think she's in pain. Or she's in pain. And so I'm thinking, what could I use? What could I use? What could I use? What could I use? So my wife was a server for years. She and I are still married. I'm not creeping on you. What can I say? I said, hey, you know, we've been in here a few times. And my wife served tables for like 25 years. And she had a lot of pain in her shoulders and wrists. And I just, you know... Do you have pain in your shoulders and wrists? And she's all, you know what? It's funny you should say that because I have a condition where my muscles get all tense. And she had a name for it. And it says it makes my shoulders and my wrists get numb and I almost can't even carry anything. And I'm thinking in my head, yes. It wasn't weird. It wasn't creepy. On the outside, it's like, oh. Okay, well, you know what? As you're going about your business, I'd love to pray for you if that's okay. I mean, you don't have to stay here, but I'll pray that pain will go away. And she got this look on her face and said, okay, thanks. And she went and Chris and I prayed. And afterwards, it was like, that was pretty cool. We're talking about spiritual gifts and, you know, what we could potentially do to help people. And all of a sudden, God gives an opportunity. I think, well, I could never do that. Well, I could never do that either. But it did. And it's not to tell you, and that's why I'm the pastor here, because that's just how I roll. No. It's more of a, if he can work in me, he can work in anybody. You agree so quickly. Okay. So let's fast forward down to life together, the real world. That example I just gave is what we do in the real world. We're looking for the opportunity to be and encourage and to do what Jesus would be doing if he was walking in our shoes. Some of us are going to be much better at with people that we know. Great. Then do it with people that you know. Others are going to be much more Joni-like and be able to engage with people who are just that you come in contact with. Never met a friend. Never met a person who wasn't a potential friend. It's like, I have. I've met several that are not potential friends. She is not. Living in the real world on purpose, recognizing we could be potentially Jesus' answer for a person that day. So let's bow our heads. Lord, I thank you that you're good. And in the midst of all of this, I pray that you would show us how we can be better together. In the areas where we have gone through hard things or been damaged, or even where it's such a daunting task to even think about doing that, I pray that you would bring healing to us. And I pray that you would give us opportunity with people that we know to be an encouragement and to provoke and stir them up towards good works in you. I pray that within our church family, we would look at the opportunity to sit by people and to interact with people and to eat with people, knowing that we are better together and that you use those relationships to help us to grow in you. In Jesus' name.
This has been a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada. You can reach us at web@hillside4.org.